This is episode number 533 with high performance psychologist Dr. Michael Gervais.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Michael Jordan said, "You have to expect things of yourself before you can do them." I'm very excited about this episode because it's all about how to optimize your performance, how to take your life to a whole nother level, and it starts with the mindset. I'm super pumped about Dr. Michael Gervais, who is with us right now. He is a high-performance psychologist with over 20 years of experience working in high-stakes environments with some of the top athletes, musicians, and executives in the world. He is known for his work with the Super Bowl-winning Seattle Seahawks, helping them with their mental performance, Microsoft executives, Olympic beach volleyball star Kerry Walsh Jennings, world record skydiver Felix Baumgartner, and PGA golfer Luke Donald. Dr. Gervais has been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, CNN, ABC, Fox News, and many other media outlets. And the things we talked about today are really how to optimize the mindset for peak performance, for high performance. And one of the things we cover is what is really going on in the brain when someone is actually in flow state at their most peak performance. What's happening in the brain? And why do we need to be more if we want to do more? And how we can be more. How our mind is like a drunken monkey most of the time, and how to manage it effectively. Three tactics to discover your personal philosophy about life. And really, Michael says that this is one of the keys to overcoming a lot of fears is by having this personal philosophy, and he teaches you how to find it. Also, what to do about loneliness that comes from pushing your edges, because those that want to achieve great things usually have to go to a lonely place, especially in their mind, when doing those great things. Some powerful stuff. Make sure to take a screenshot of this right now. Tag me on your Instagram story, at Lewis Howes, and share this with your friends who want to achieve more high performance in high stakes environments. Also, a big shout out to the fan of the week. This is from Ash Passion, who said, "Seriously love your podcast. It's very enlightening and insightful. It makes me feel like I'm learning from the top knowledge experts. I listen when I'm out and about, while I'm cooking and cleaning, and if I need motivation, I turn it on. If I want a good start to my day, I check it out. I can't get enough. Thank you." So thank you so much for being the review of the week. And if you guys want a chance to be considered for a shout out on the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review over on iTunes. We go through those every single week. We take out some of the best and we'll give you a shout out to be considered as the review of the week. So check it out over on iTunes and leave us a review at School of Greatness. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Okay.
Quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Also, we are about a month and a half away from the launch of The Mask of Masculinity. This is the book I've been working on for over 2 years. It's a journey about how men can embrace vulnerability, create strong relationships, and live their fullest lives. What's in this for men? Men will understand what holds them back from their most powerful self. They'll develop an unwavering foundation of confidence in any situation. It will help propel them to a level of power and success that they may never thought possible. Embrace and let go of any fears that hold them back from their dreams and so much more. But this book is not only for men. It's for women too. It's for all the women who want to understand the men in their life better. It's for women who want to learn ways you can emotionally support the men you love, to learn powerful tools to connect more intimately in your relationships. Learn how to get men you love to open up and be more vulnerable and understand what holds the men in your life back. That and so much more. Make sure to go to Mask of Masculinity right now. You can pre-order one copy and get a bonus, or you can pre-order multiple copies. I'm giving away a ton of goodies for people that get 3 copies, that get 10 copies, 250 copies. Check out all the bonuses. It's unbelievable what we're adding, how much value we're adding when you buy one book, 3 books, or more. So check it out at maskofmasculinity.com. And when you pre-order a copy of your book, make sure to take a screenshot of the receipt and tag me on your Instagram story at Lewis Howes, and I will respond to each person who does that. So check it out, maskofmasculinity.com, and tag me on Instagram when you do. All right, it is time to take your mind to a whole new level, so you can optimize for any high-stake environment you have in your life to get into the flow and take control of your dreams and your life. Without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only, Dr. Michael Gervais. Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We have Dr. Michael Gervais in the house. Good to see you, my friend. How are you doing?
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course, man. I'm very excited. Now, you are a high-performance psychologist with 20 years of experience working with a lot of high-level Olympians, athletes, executives, to just high-stakes performers in general.
That's right.
And I'm curious, how did this begin for you? Was it originally in sports psychology? I think a lot of people originate from sports, or was it something else for you?
Yeah, great question. I'll take it back to how it started for me, mm-hmm. which I think that most trajectories in life begin with some sort of pain. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get clear on what that is, then, I think the path gets much easier. So I'll start there. But before I go there, the mechanical part is pretty simple. Undergraduate degree in psychology, master's degree in kinesiology. I'll put an asterisk on that for a minute. And then back to a PhD in psychology with an emphasis in sport. Mm-hmm. And then licensed as a psychologist in California. And then figured out I didn't know anything. At that point, I still didn't know anything. I knew
even
all
with the
theory.
Degrees.
Yeah, I mean, with all those training. But what I did know is all the base theory. And I got to stand on the shoulders of giants that have researched over and over again, like how the human mind and body work together and what those theoretical orientations were.
Right.
Phenomenal.
But you weren't like a tactician at the time yet, like working mm-hmm. in the weeds with people's minds.
No, not yet. And their fears. Not enough.
Yeah.
And then I went
more like role playing in class or something.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, it was, right?
You're about to go on stage. Let's walk through your fears. Yeah.
I remember the first time, I'll get to the first question in a minute, but the first time that, so before you before you become licensed, you have to be supervised for 3,000 hours. And that's by another psychologist saying, hey, why did you put your pencil down at minute 22 in the conversation?
Oh my gosh.
You know, and how come you took the conversation this way? Did you miss A, B, and C? And so like there's an intense amount of training that goes into sitting in front of another human being and having them express what's deep within them, right? Their aspirations, their pains, the dark side, the light side. And there's incredible training just to say that for me, there was incredible training for me to say that now at that point, after the 3,000 hours, I still didn't know anything.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the reason that I knew I didn't know anything is because I hadn't been in the trenches yet with people that were masterful, people that were had created enough training that they could authentically express what's within themselves. And so therein lies why I got started, is that I grew up here in California and my first sport was surfing. Mm-hmm. And there's free surfing and there's competitive surfing. There's two types of surfing. And free surfing, I was a good little, 15-year-old free surfer, meaning when it was just me and Mother Nature, no problem. Like it was really good, you know.
You're the man out there.
You were right. Like
hitting every wave.
I could figure it out well enough with the boys. Like it was fun. And then as soon as competition happened, and there was people on the beach and there was judges and
cameras
the whole thing was happening, that I felt like a shell of myself. Mm. And I'm a 15, 16-year-old kid at this point, shaking out in the water in, surf that I'm super comfortable in. And there was one day where a surfer passed by me and we were in a heat. There's only three guys out in the heat and he paddles by me. Now he's like a grown man and he paddles by me and he says, Gervais, you got to stop thinking about what could go wrong. And I thought, how the hell does he know what's in my head? That's it. Like I couldn't feel my feet. I couldn't feel my body. It was completely disconnected to my board. And so like a good competitor, he didn't tell me what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
He just told me not to think about like all the things that I was worrying about. So I sat for a minute and I said, okay, well, if that's the case, let me start thinking about what I want to have happen. And so I just kind of mused and, created some imagination about that, about what it would feel like to surf at my best. Mm-hmm. So that was the first introduction, looking back with hindsight, that I had to sports psychology. And I got out of that heat and I said, there's something to like how my mind's worked. It's screwed up. My mind's screwed up. Like I can't be myself as soon as there's people watching and judging me. Mm-hmm. Right. And so call it performance anxiety, call it whatever you want. Yeah. I didn't have command of my mind and I didn't know there was such a thing as sports psychology, but I knew that the mind and my craft there was an intimate link at that point. And so that's what started it. That intersection of pain of not being able to authentically express what was inside of me. And that's what kind of took me down this path.
And so you started researching and studying this while you're in high school?
No. I wish I was that switched on. No, I mean, I barely got out of high school. Mm-hmm. And I was the first person in my family, to go to college. I started junior college because there was this moment in time when my mom, I specifically remember it, she pulled me aside. It was my senior year in high school. And she pulled me aside and she said, Mike, we tried. And your father and I, we went to the School of Hard Knocks and we didn't know how to support you in this way. But at this point in your life, you need to do one of two things. You need to go to junior college and we'll help you there, or you need to get out and get a job. Hmm. And I thought
at 18,
I was like 17, 18. Yeah. I started school early and I said, no, I know how to go to school and surf. So let me extend like year 12 to 13 and 14. Let me see if I can just play this game a little bit longer. And, so I went to a junior college and it was at that place that there was three professors that saw this, grommet. That's what they call young surfers. This little grommet, bouncing around school, just trying to figure out how to get out of class again. Mm-hmm. I tested in, this is all sounds really unbecoming, but I think there's a good story to it, is that I tested into remedial math and remedial English. And it's not because I didn't understand the concepts. It's because I didn't understand how to study. And I missed high school, which is in some ways, an assault on, public high schools.
Yeah.
So I missed high school. Literally, I was in the water surfing more than I was in class. It felt like. Mm-hmm. I tested in remedial math, remedial English. There was three professors up at this school, Marymount College, and it was a psychologist, a theologian, and a philosopher. Those are the three professors. And I'll tell you what. I fell in love. They showed me how to fall in love with working to understand the invisible. And it was like, from that point forward, no one ever had to ask me to read another book. That was it. And it just took off for me.
Wow.
Yeah,
so incredible. It was a catalyst. You had a great catalyst that like finally made you understand the power of learning. And
yeah, it was pain and love. It was those two things. The pain of not being myself and then the love of like this learning that took place.
Right.
And so I love to share that story. It's not has very little to do with me. It has to do with, you know, those three professors.
Yeah.
And so.
Now, was there a moment when you kept competing and you realized, okay, now I know what's going on in my mind and I know that I have this anxiety or this fear or whatever it was holding you back. And I'm learning how to switch it off so that I can step into my vision or to what I want to create as opposed to what's going to happen wrong. Was there a moment when that started happening in the water where you're like, wow, it finally started to click?
Yes and no. I wish I had that dramatic thing, you know, and like
I can.
For me, it never quite worked that way. It was like this gradual progression. And the way I liken it to is, I think it's the case for most of us, is that, you know, when you have like a toothache or you have something that is like aching, or there's a pain and then, or hiccups. And then you look back, like time progresses and you go, oh my God, my toothache is gone. Or my hiccups are gone. Like, this is great. So this is like this gradual progression, but not this one kind of instantaneous lightning rod moment, at least for me, you know, in my life. So no, there's this gradual progression where I felt that I was more grounded. I understood because of increased awareness. And then but at the same time, I was learning from these really bright men and women, some of the best doers in the world. And they were on a very similar journey. And the only difference I had is that they were in the amphitheater doing it. And at this young phase of my life, I just had some theoretical orientation. So early on in my career, I felt like I learned much more than they learned. And then I'm not saying it's different now. I'm still like, I want to be a beginner and everywhere I go. So,
yeah, of course.
That's kind of the arc, if you will.
Sure, sure. What do you think is the main thing that holds people back from high performance when it matters the most?
Well, I think there's two parts to that question. You know, you add the when it matters the most. And that's a really important, nuanced, esoteric phrase. And I love this phrase, when it matters most, because if you listen to ESPN or you listen to Fox Sports or you listen to any of those, you know, types of shows, they'll say that big game, defining play, defining moment. And there really isn't such a thing. And so when it matters most is now. It's not later. It's not the Super Bowl. It's not your Everest. It's not the pitch that you're going to give to a VC firm. That's not the moment. The moment is now, and it's always now, and it's now again. And if we are present, it's now again, and it's always now. And so the idea is that there's no such thing as a moment later that's more important than the one you have now. Because, again, this is very esoteric. If we were to strip away your ability and my ability to live in this present moment, then we don't have life, right? It's the absence of life. But what happens for most of us is that if you think about this moment a little bit like a raindrop, like it's moving, okay? And eventually it'll crash, death, if you will. But like this raindrop that's moving, we can be on the edges of the raindrop or we could be right in the center. We don't ever leave our raindrop, our unique raindrop. But when we go to the edges of the raindrop, it's like we are not fully in the present moment. And so what gets in the way? Anxiety, you know, worry. What do they think of me? What if it goes wrong? Do I have what it takes? Am I going to embarrass myself? Am I going to let people down? You know, so that anxiety is a real condition. It's estimated that, well, the research suggests that 15% of Americans suffer, and that's the word, from anxiety. The estimate is probably more like 30%. Suffer, and it's a mental disorder, and anxiety by definition is the excessive worry about what could go wrong. So that's at the root.
What's the opposite of anxiety?
Groundedness. Yeah, a sense of poise and presence.
Focusing on what could go right.
Yeah. Well, not even that, but like yes, right? Mm-hmm. So if anxiety is worrying about what could go wrong, an anecdote for that experience is focusing on what could go right, what could be fantastic.
Yeah. Living in gratitude.
That's right. Yeah. Which obviously you're familiar with, but the essence of it is coming back to the center of that raindrop, that esoteric thing I'm talking about, like that falling raindrop, to time your ability to be right in the center. And what does that mean? That you're grounded, you're present, your mind is on time with what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so you've heard great athletes talk about the game slows down.
Yeah.
It doesn't slow down. That's not what happens, is that our mind becomes fully syncopated at the speed of life. And we're on time. Mm. And so when we're finally on time, it's such a like a relief. Like, oh my God, this is the speed of life. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And so we don't ever have the power to slow down time. We just have the power to increase our ability to be on time.
That's
right?
Cool.
You know, in this like moment, that. Then the next moment, then the next moment. The worried mind is behind time or ahead of time. Right? And so there are times there are moments where we need to think about the future. For sure. But it's the excessive worry about what could go wrong. And I think that would be, so it's fear and fatigue are the two kind of cripplers of potential. And so if we get the fear thing right, and we have a relationship with fear, and we look for moments to challenge our relationship with fear, I can talk a lot. I love to talk about that with you. And the other is getting the fatigue thing right. And we've come in modern times to believe that we need to do more to be more. And it's broken, right? It's fundamentally broken. The idea is that we need to be more and let the doing flow from there. Be yourself, be your authentic self, be here now, you know, be grateful, be present, and let the doing flow from those. That orientation is a completely different model that, you know, it's like, I'm spending my life efforts, I think, working to share that and to help some of the best doers and thinkers in the world to reorientate what got them good, but is slowing them down from being their absolute personal best.
Mm. What's slowing them down? Fear and fatigue still?
Yeah. Well, the idea, the framework, the psychological framework that I need to do more to be more. And that's born out of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
right?
Not doing enough.
Yeah.
Could be doing more.
And the trick.
Just stressing about
that. Yeah, flat out. And the trick though there is that'll get people good. I need to do more. Uh-huh. Damn, I missed that jumper. How am I going to miss that jumper? Let's keep it like,
but
you know.
Drive them to be, practice more to, yeah.
Yeah. So that's this, you know, it's like just enough anxiety will get you good, but it will slow you down for being your absolute best at some point,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's tricky.
Yeah.
Right? There's an edge.
Because you need to be driven to train mm-hmm. and practice with that edge.
That's
in
right.
In order to be great at something.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, if you're just doing it for fun, it's different. But to be a winner, to be a champion in sports, let's say, or to be a great performer on stage, musician, whatever, you've got to put in the time.
Yeah. And I think the
deliberate time, right?
Well, yeah. It's nauseatingly how truly challenging it is to focus deeply.
Yeah.
And it's rare. You know, our the natural state of our mind is like a drunk monkey. And for some people.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too. In person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game. Or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
It's double-fisted. It's all over the place. Yeah. It's, you know, so emotionally erratic.
Good thing I don't drink, otherwise it'd be messed up in the game.
Did you have a run with that?
I've never been drunk in my life.
Stop it.
Never been drunk.
Is there
I have like a sip. I have like a Bailey's on ice every now and then, like a couple times a year. But I've never felt like a buzz or anything. I think when I went in high school, first off, I went to a private boarding school. So there was no, you weren't allowed to drink. And I was just kind of like, I don't really care. Some kids were, but I was in the dorm and didn't really have access to it and didn't care.
What were you focused on?
Sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, my vision was to be the best athlete I could be and to go, you know, get a college scholarship, play professionally. And so when I went to college, I remember when I graduated high school, all my siblings were like, you're going to be this drunk jock. Like, we already know it. And I think out of spite, I was like, I'm going to bet you I'm not going to have a single sip of alcohol my entire career in college.
There you go.
So I didn't have a single sip. Yeah. I went to so many college like parties after football games, just like crazy drunken parties, but was never even like tempted. I think because I just had in my mind, like these, my teammates are losing their edge the more they drink and like the sloppier they are, they weren't recovered for the next day. And it was holding them back the whole week and, you know, performance. So for me, I was just like, I need every edge as just a, I didn't have the speed, the strength, the skill as everyone else. I was like, I need the mental edge.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, if being hungover is a significant problem to being consistently great, like that becomes problematic. And so I had a similar experience to you, right? And mine was born a little bit differently. That I had a family of addiction.
Yes.
Right. So it was in my family and I saw it and I said, I'm not going down that path. Yeah. So it's easy to repeat that when one feels like it's not enough. One drink feels like it's not enough, but a thousand's, you know, no, what's the saying? One's too many, a thousand's not enough. Mm. So there's like this craving that I felt early on to it. And I said,
wow.
I said, whoa, you know, which I'm so thankful that I had such dysfunction that I was able to witness.
Sure.
But I knew that if I'm doing what my boys are doing, that I'm not getting up in the morning surfing.
Yeah.
So forget about it.
No, you're sleeping. Yeah, and you're,
I love it.
Exhausted. Yeah.
Yeah.
So fear and anxiety. So.
No, fear and fatigue.
Fear and fatigue. Sorry. Yeah. Why? So it's hard to perform if we're fatigued physically and emotionally, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why do we fear so much about what could go wrong? What other people think about us? Who we're going to let down? That we're not worthy enough, good enough. Why do we fear that?
It's a great question.
So much.
Yeah, it's a really great question.
For our whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that, so there's some biological things we can take a look at, and then there's also psychological, right? And then, so it's the interaction of those two. Biologically, our brain, as best as we think, and it's 3 pounds of silly putty that sits in our skull that's more complicated than, you know, like the brightest minds in neuroscience are still amazed by how our brain works. And so, but we think that our brain is designed to scan the world and find what's dangerous, right? And so our ancestors passed that gift on to us. Your lineage passed that gift on to you that they were able to survive. And so how survive? Way back in ancient times that they could scan the world and easily discern how to be ready between, now let me say it more eloquently. They could scan the world and find what was dangerous or what was threatening so that they wouldn't be eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Eaten by the saber-toothed tiger, as the story goes, right?
Right. Or they want to eat something bad or they want to, whatever, protect themselves.
That's right. So then not only was nature dangerous and all the elements in nature, but other humans became dangerous to each other. So now what we've created is the ability, the heightened ability to read microexpressions. And microexpressions are the small squinting of the eyes, the frontalis muscles between the eyes. And when those squint or don't move, it's a sense of threat, right? Because we don't know what's happening to that from that person. And so if you got this ancient brain that's programmed beautifully to find what's dangerous, and we scanned in an undisciplined way our environment around us, we're going to find dangerous things.
Yeah.
And in modern times, we're not chased by saber tooths anymore. The new modern saber tooth are other people's opinions. And so we're well-conditioned from an early age, and this next generation is going to be even more well-conditioned.
Social
you know,
media.
With Insta highlight reels for everything. My life is better than yours. I'm going to show you via a snap picture. Is that, you know, so we've got this real challenge that to pursue a path of our personal best, we have to override our DNA. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do. It requires deep commitment to training. And that's a that's what psychology, the optimal opportunities that psychology offers us is just that. How to train our minds to override our DNA and to use the smaller parts of our brain to scan the world and find opportunity.
How can we train our minds every single day throughout the day to do that?
Yeah.
To overcome this fear. What are the things that we could be doing?
I will rattle off as many as you want to hear, like tactics. And then I also want to put a small little asterisk next to this is that the tactic alone is not enough, right? It's the stitching of the tactics. It's the stitching of the mental skills training to each other and to one's personal philosophy. So without a personal philosophy, it's like we end up just trying all these different things to get better, but what are we getting better at? What other people want us to be? So there's a fundamental piece of work first.
Got it.
Right?
So what would be your personal philosophy?
I'll share mine.
Cool.
I've spent a lot of time with it, and I'll tell, if I could tell a story of how it worked, I think it will harden it a little bit. Is that, so I needed a mentor when I was growing up. And I'm thankful. What's up, Gary? Like, I'm thankful for Gary. He helped me out in so many different ways, even currently today. And so one day he says, hey, Mike, I want to introduce you to my mentor. Oh, great. I didn't know there was such a thing as like a grand mentor. Like, am I ready? And so, you know, it was this moment. I said, okay, here we go. And it was this, but to my surprise, it was this small, you know, three bedroom, two bath home. And it was well manicured. And it was this pleasant, like 78, 82 year old woman comes out. And I was just so pleasantly surprised, like, okay, this is going to get good. Cause she just had that sense of wise woman. And it's the setting that you would imagine. The shag carpet was a little bit long. The drapes were just a little bit, you know, outdated. And so we sat at the table, and she's pouring me tea, and she says, you know, welcome. And so interested to meet you. And then we sat down, and she said, so tell me what you're about. And I said, okay, well, the things that I'm most interested, well, okay, let me start this way. And she looked at me, and she looked at my mentor, and she said, I thought you said he was ready. I said, oh my, I am ready. Like, wait, no, I want to answer that. And she grabbed my tea and she said, you know, when you're ready, sweetie, I'd like to share this tea with you.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I was like super embarrassed in that moment. Like I thought I let my mentor down, and you know, it was like this really intense experience.
Wow. How old were you?
I was at that point, it was right after, it was like 26, 27, somewhere in that range. And so I didn't know what to do. And so it was this awkward moment, but I knew that I was not prepared to even answer the most basic question, who are you? And so that's where I just want to anchor that, because I think that that captures what most of us feel like a lot.
Most people don't feel like they know who they are.
Yeah. And so I had this dramatic moment for me, but you know, I think it's a really important process to go through. So let's call it a personal philosophy, but then let's extract one level out from that. The greatest and the most influential people across the globe are very clear about their philosophy. The greatest movers and shakers and change makers are spiritual leaders and political leaders for the most part. And now we're starting to see business leaders, you know, to do that. What was Confucius' philosophy? What was Buddha's philosophy? What was Jesus' philosophy? They're really clear. Jesus was, and I want to oversimplify a beautiful set of traditions, but Jesus was more about love and service. Buddha was more about, you know, that all people are suffering. And then so let's work through compassion to live with loving kindness. What was Martin Luther King Jr.'s? Dr. King Jr.'s was about equality, you know. Malcolm X, equality, totally different tone, totally different approach. Mother Teresa, Helen Keller. What was Helen Keller's like? Okay, I'm going to go for it. And like, I deserve to be educated as well. She changed the educational system. So the most influential people were very clear. Why? Because they lined up their thoughts, their words, and actions to the thing that matters most to them. And that's what a philosophy is about. Everybody already has one. You have one, I have one. Whether we could articulate it at knife point in a dark alley, totally different element, right? And so I think that that's a nice litmus test. Like, could you get it out in front of a deranged person who's got a knife to your throat? Like, could you, do you, are you that clear what you stand for? And do you have your personal philosophy? So that's the litmus test for folks that I work with. And I'll share mine. It's every day is an opportunity to create a living masterpiece. And so there's optimism embedded in there. There's creative juices embedded in there. And then there's, you know, this idea of a living masterpiece. And so when I met Coach Carroll, head coach of the Seattle Seahawks about 6 years ago, six, 7 years ago, one of our first conversations, it was over dinner, a mutual friend put us together. And we had this really wonderful conversation. And it was born out of like, what is your philosophy? So he had been on the same similar journey, I should say, where he was fired from two head coach jobs in the NFL.
Yeah.
And on the second time he was fired. So from pain creates change. Uncomfortableness is how we grow, but change is how we, uncomfortableness is how we grow, but pain is why we change. Mm. So he experienced pain and said, if I get another chance, I'm going to do it exactly the way that is authentic to me, but I got to figure out what that is.
Well, yeah.
So he just went and scratched down on, you know, multiple pads, spiral, you know, old school spiral notebooks, just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. Took a second pass at it and said, what are the words that keep showing up? Circled those words, wrote more about those words. And that's how it eventually spilled out of him. His philosophy is always compete. Hmm. Always compete for what, you say? Always compete to be a great dad, to be a great coach, to be a great friend, to be a great partner. Like, always compete. And so he says at his core, he's a competitor and he's always trying to become better.
Wow.
And so he's built his whole life around, you know, that, and including the Seattle Seahawks and USC before that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So philosophy is really important to us. And so that would be the most significant investment first.
How can someone create their own philosophy?
The three ways to do it. Okay. So now we're into some tactics, mm-hmm. right? Which I think is really important as well. So the tactics, there's three ways to get clear. Be around wise people and have conversations about philosophy and wisdom, right? Be around them. If you don't know one, go try to. They're rare, but you know, maybe pray about it. Maybe talk about it. Like, find wise people in your lives or become one. You know, right? Okay.
Or you can watch videos of them or read their books to get started, you know.
Yeah. And yes, start down that path. Nice job. You know, and there's something about being in their presence, if you can, that is different.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
Okay. And there's, you know, synagogues and churches, and there's folks that you can find these people in. They don't have to be spiritual. They can be secular as well. So be around wise people, write, journal. You know, there's something about forcing words out of your native tongue, all the words of your native tongue, to write down the words and to have a forcing function to choose words that matter. Mm. Like, there's something about that. And then the third is, and all of them are equally important, is listening. So mindfulness practice. So listening to, it's one of the most ancient mindfulness traditions, is asking yourself, it's called contemplative mindfulness, is ask yourself the question, who am I? And just go down that path. Who am I? And you'll learn. You'll learn some ugly things. You'll learn some wonderful things. And you'll really learn who you are. And so those are three ways, right? And then there's another easy way. I don't know if it's on our website or whatever, but we've developed a philosophy primer, you know, and I don't think it's up on our website, but those would be the three tactics to get closer.
Yeah.
You know, and then if I, do you want me to go one click deeper?
Yeah.
You know, if mechanically, what I would suggest you do is write down a list of all the people that really inspire you. Like, who are those people? Just write down that list, and you don't have to know them. Mm-hmm. Then write to the right of that column for each person. Write down the characteristics that they embody, that inspiration comes from. So if it was like, so let's say Martin Luther King Jr., and you say, you know, courage or intelligence or people person or conviction. Okay, those words matter. And then as you go down your list, you'll start to see some characteristics. You'll start to see some stuff.
Yeah.
And then once you're clear, I don't know, we talk about going from clarity to conviction. And that's the entire arc of mental training, is first you got to get some clarity, and then invest in your craft and invest in your mind so that you can live a life of conviction.
Yeah.
in any environment. You can be about you in any environment. Mm-hmm. And as humans, there's only three things we can train. Everything falls within one of these three buckets. We can train our body, you know, that professional sport, you know, and has done great to show us what that looks like. Yeah. You can train your craft, and we all have a craft, right? Like athletics or arts or music. It's easy to see that, you know, mm-hmm. your craft of interviewing and writing, and many more probably, mm-hmm. but there's also other crafts that you have and that we all have. It might be things that we're not paid for, but we're passionate about.
Yeah.
Okay. So it could be parenting. It could be guitar. It could be lots of different things. Okay. So you can train your body, you can train your craft, and you can train your mind. That's it. Those are the only three. So we don't see training the mind as being extra. Who's got extra time nowadays? Mm-hmm. There's no extra. It's fundamental to becoming your very best is training one of those three elements. And if you train all three of them, it's an accelerated path. Mm-hmm. That's, you know.
What's the best way someone could train their mind on a daily basis? They have 30 minutes a day.
Yeah, good. So start with your philosophies. That would be mental training. Clear, right? Get clear.
Clarity on your philosophy.
That's the first part.
Figure that out.
Yeah. And that's lonely, deep, deep work. Yeah. And that might take years. Or could pop right, spill right out of you, mm-hmm. you know, right? So start now. the Dalai Lama has something, or it was actually a former Dalai Lama said, enlightenment takes lifetimes or the next moment. So pay attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's the first. And then the second, I would say, the second largest pillar would be to invest in mindfulness. I'm happy to talk about that. But you can train confidence. You can train calm. You can train your ability to be focused in the present moment. You can train optimism. Which is an accelerant to mental toughness. Mm-hmm. I know that you have great value for training gratitude. Mm-hmm. And so Martin Seligman did a wonderful piece of research out of UPenn that just writing down at the end of the day three amazing things that you experienced has a significant impact in life satisfaction. Mm-hmm. It can impact your relationships with others.
Yeah.
If you are depressed, people that came into his study stabilize their depression. People that were not depressed that came into their study after, I think it was 1 month, 3 month, and 6 month follow-up, they had a significant overall increase in their overall life satisfaction. It's as simple as writing down three amazing things, mm-hmm. right? And so that's one way to train optimism and gratitude. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of ways to do it. And I don't know if you want a specific tactic or...
Mindfulness, do you mean meditation or you mean other type of practice?
So mindfulness, you could substitute the word meditation mm-hmm. for mindfulness. Meditation for us conjures up a term that there's a lot of stigma attached to. And that stigma is changing. But I spend most of my time in very rugged and hostile environments. And to talk about mindfulness in those environments is a stretch, you know, to talk about meditation is the stretch. Mindfulness feels like, okay, mindfulness training, what is that?
Yeah.
What's about increasing your awareness? That's important. Meditation has that all other baggage. Yeah, so is it the same thing? Close.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is a state and a skill. Meditation is the skill training mechanism for it. And so let's just for simplicity call it mindfulness training. And I mean, do you want to go deeper than that?
Yeah.
Well, if the definition of mindfulness is the ability to be here now, to be where your feet are without judgment, without the noise, the idea is to get to the signal. And the signal is always now, and to gate out the noise. I mean, engineers right now are going, yeah, that's what it's about. You know, signal to noise ratio. Mm-hmm. But that's what it is for our minds as well. And remember, our natural state of our mind is like a drunken monkey. Uh-huh. So a disciplined mind, a still mind is rare. And mindfulness is increasing your ability to recognize when your mind is away from the present moment and bringing it back. And it's not about not having thoughts. That's an old thought that most people are recognizing that that's not the case. But mindfulness is really about once you recognize that your mind has wandered from a particular state or there's judgment around it, to gently bring it back to now. Mm-hmm. And that now can be a breath. It could be the next thought, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's two types of mindfulness, single point mindfulness training, and then the contemplative style. Single point mindfulness is as simple as focusing on one thing for an extended period of time. So master the inhale, then the exhale, mm-hmm. and then master the inhale again, and then the exhale. So that's just focusing on your breathing, right? One breath at a time for, let's call it 6, 7, 8 minutes. That's the minimal effective dose to get some therapeutic effect from it. Mm-hmm. And then the optimal dose is 20 minutes a day, according to research and science.
Focusing on single point.
Just single point. And then so on your inhale, your mind will wander. right? And an inhale takes about 4 seconds. So just the inhale, your mind will wander. And then once you notice that it's wandered, great. That's the moment of awareness.
Bring it back.
And then just bring it back gently, you know, swiftly, quickly. Yeah. And so you're training the skill of refocus. You're training the skill of awareness. That's single point mindfulness. It could be a dot on the wall. It could be a mantra. It could be a sound. It could be your breath. It could be lots of things, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's single point. And then the other is contemplative, which is it involves some sort of relaxation strategy to relax yourself, just like the single point. And then just watch. Just watch.
So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all. Or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare, but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the tree of life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Watch what happens. Watch your thoughts. You know, watch where thought A, how it transforms to B, to B1, to B2, to B3, to maybe over to C. Yeah. And just watch without critiquing or judging and just go on that ride. Sure. And that's the kind of the second tactic to mindfulness.
Who are some of the most impressive performers you've worked with that you're allowed to talk about?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. there's so many that I would love to share with you. Yeah. Well, I'll do one that's nameless right now, and then I'll do a couple that have been public about it. And this is one of the challenges of being licensed as a psychologist, mm-hmm. is that we create an environment between client and myself. We create an environment that is unlike anything else, where the sanctuary of trust and the depth of the conversation that we go in are like no other normal conversation. So out of respect and trust for the code that we've established, that I don't share names in that way. And but some have been public and they've shared names. And so I'm happy to talk about within scope of what I can talk about there. But there's an artist that I'm working with right now, and musician producer that has had when he worked last year 50 nights, and every night that he books, it's 1.6 million a night. So a significant global influencer from a music perspective. Oh, no. Yeah, he's, you know, his music, everyone listening. But what's impressive is that it seems like they are from a different planet, but they're not. They're just like you and I. They're humans that have the same exact ambitions, the same exact fears and worries, the same relationship struggles that we both have. And they have just figured out how to be more attuned to the signal than the noise.
The signal meaning what?
The present moment that is aligned with his philosophy and also matches the vision of how he'd like to see himself in the future, the vision of what he'd like to see. And one of the great psychologists of our era, his name is Dr. Albert Bandura. And Dr. Albert Bandura introduced so many really influential theories about how the mind works in optimization. One of his theories is self-efficacy. Efficacy is a word for power. And part of having being an efficacious or powerful person is that we have clarity of how we would like our future to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's going to happen now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because you got to back into incredible work. But future, right? Imagination of having a vision of what that is, and then back into how to make that happen. This sounds so like, it sounds so simple, and, you know, psychologists and folks for years have been talking about this. It really is powerful, though. Mm-hmm. It's a really powerful tactic to do. So, so anyways, this musician has the same fragility that you and I have, and at the same time is more attuned to the signal. And that's who am I, my philosophy, where am I going, my vision, and then great awareness of my thoughts, words, and actions lining up to make that work. So they're better attuned to signal.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'd be remiss to not include two world-class performers that I've learned so much from, Felix Baumgartner. And so, you know, you might not recognize the name. Some people might, but he was the athlete in the Red Bull Stratos project. And so the Red Bull Stratos project, it was back in 2012, where a team of scientists and an athlete, Felix, were working to sort out what would happen if a human were to jump from the edges of space without a capsule. It was a life-changing experience for everyone involved.
Crazy. I remember watching it on YouTube or something, or where it was streaming. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. What was your experience watching it?
My experience first was like, man, this guy must be in a lonely, isolated space right now, physically, but also mentally. I'm sure there was earpiece and, you know, he had communication, radio and everything, but the place your mind goes with that much time, like the more you rise and the pressure you're feeling and all the worries and fears of what could go wrong and feeling like I'm alone in this situation. Millions of people watching and I have people in my ear or whatever it was. I don't know if it was an earpiece or if there was a radio communication. Even with that, they're however many miles away from me right now, and I'm by myself here. No one can save me or help me, essentially. If something goes wrong, it's over. So the amount of fear, pressure, uncertainty, insecurity, what could go wrong, what if the whole world sees me die or fail, you know, all of that. And so I was just wondering how he was able to train for that.
Yeah. So, okay, great insight. Because the loneliness that comes from pushing on your edges is a real human experience. It's huge, and it's so hard to push right on the edge of instability, psychological, emotional instability is really hard to do. For a long time, we thought we could get people there from physical exertion, you know, get their heart rate pounding. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, that's not quite it. Yeah. I see how you're responding to that. It's pushing to the edges of emotional instability, emotional capacity. And so if you don't practice that, you cannot become the best version. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit like a balloon, right? So you blow air into a balloon and it stretches. And then there's more space inside the balloon to play, okay? And then it contracts. And if you blow more air into it, and that blowing of air is pushing to the capacity of the balloon. Two breaths, it's like, there's even more space, but there's lots more to go, right? Yeah. There's 20, 40.
But what if it pops?
That's the interesting thing. Yeah.
When's it going to pop? How much can it go?
It actually doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, so we have this fear about like psychologically cracking. Now, that can happen. It can happen. I'm putting an asterisk next to this. It can, but it is so rare that a person, and such extreme circumstances that a person mentally has a breakdown. It's actually more rare than we think. What we're actually feeling most of the time for people is this chronic level of stress where we feel overwhelmed, but we're not ready to break. That's not what's happening. We're just exhausted. Mm-hmm. We're overwhelmed.
Fatigued.
Yeah, fatigued. Yeah. We're, and in modern times, like we're not sleeping enough.
Yeah, we're emotionally overwhelmed. Our nutrition is bad or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Relationships, everything.
We, on the world stage, we don't talk about working harder.
Yeah.
That's a given. Everyone on the world stage is like grinding, you know, at a world-class clip. We spend more time on the science and art of recovery, you know, to get that right so that we can wake up tomorrow and
perform high again,
be ready, you know, for what? Pushing against the limits physically and emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Okay. So back to Felix. Back to Felix.
Yeah.
He changed the way the world understands what's possible. And he pushed right up against his limits. Now, this was like a multiple year project. About halfway through the project, he reached a limit. Where he became claustrophobic and he wasn't able to be in his spacesuit anymore. And that's where I was asked to be part of the project. Mm. You know, could we work with his mind to extinguish fear? Wow.
No pressure.
You know, the stakes were high. And I look back in that experience and all the bright minds and the scientists that were part of it. Beautiful experience. And yes, we successfully helped Felix extinguish his fear of being in the suit so that he could have clarity and command of his mind to execute a lifelong dream that he had, as well as change the nature of what the rest of us think is possible.
Yeah, yeah. What were some of the things you guys did?
Well, so all the stuff, philosophy and vision that we just talked about, that
helped
was really
helped
him get
clear. His philosophy on his on who he is.
On who he is. Yeah. You know, like,
did he have that before?
Well, we all have it, but could we get it out under knife point?
Yeah.
You know, and so ideally you want to try to get it down to a page and then try to get down to 25 words.
And then a sentence and whatever. Yeah.
Or maybe three like words, three words or whatever, you know.
Well, so what did he come up with?
Yeah, that's not public.
Okay, gotcha. That's a
great question. I wish it was. There's going to be a documentary coming out.
He'll share that.
Yeah, so it's coming out soon. So cool. I'm sure he'll share that.
Assuming it's Breaking Limits or something. You know,
yeah, it'll be. It'll,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anything's possible. You know, whatever. Yeah, something. You didn't say it, but I'm saying it.
Yeah, that's good. And so, okay, so that was part of it. And then the other part is if we need to extinguish fear. So anyone that's,
before we go there, when he got clear on that, did a lot of his fears start to fade then, or is there so much more that needed to happen?
Yeah, there's still more, right? Then we need to actually train the mind. So getting clarity is really great.
Yes.
It's the foundation.
Yes.
And then it's like the two anchors, philosophy and vision are two really important pillars or anchors in the system. And then the space between clarity and conviction is the place of training the mind. So we spent time identifying the thoughts that got in his way. And then we spent time on strategies on how to change those thoughts or work with those thoughts to have more optimal, productive, progressive thoughts.
Can you give an example of
maybe a
general
not for
example?
Him. General example. Yeah, cool.
I'm afraid I'm going to die.
This shit again. You know, like that's a thought like, I got to do this shit again. That's one, like that. Yeah. Or another one would be like, oh my God, the pressure's really on today.
Yeah.
Or something like, man, I'm going to let some people down. It's all the stuff that we've already talked about.
Yeah.
But it's increasing the awareness of that destructive, negative, counterproductive thought.
So if we're forever going to look bad or if we're going to let someone down, what's something we could do to reframe that?
Go back to your philosophy. It probably doesn't have anything to do with others, like living to their standards. It probably has to do with caring about others, not caring what they think about you, right? Somewhere in that range. So there's this necessary work, I think, that is required for most of us, which is a decoupling between what we do and who we are. Mm. And if you can pull those two things apart and no longer be bound by I am what I do, and if you can pull those two things apart, then there's great freedom. And it's the freedom to say, I can love you and not give a shit what you think about me. And if you can find that space to love other people as best as you possibly can, which can only happen by the way that you love yourself, right? So our relationship with ourselves is really important. So I love you and I don't care what you think about me anymore.
Mm.
Incredible freedom on that side. So we needed to get some of that. The other part was recognizing the counterproductive thoughts, having a way to work with those thoughts to get over to something that is more productive, more positive. And that sounds all wonderful, but the way that you do that is that you've got to be credible with what you say to yourself.
Credible.
You can't say to yourself like, I'm a tough MF-er.
And you're not.
If you haven't done the work.
Yeah.
You know, like, what was your first sport?
I played everything.
Football?
But I played basketball, football,
basketball,
track.
Football, yeah. So
football
let's
in college and then.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So let's say football.
I play with the USA handball team right now still.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I knew that. Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool. Okay, so let's go eye hand coordination or something. And if I say, yeah, I'm good at that now, and then you say, oh, okay, cool, let's go play. I'm not as good as you, and I'm certainly not as good as I could be. I haven't trained it, so I'm going to get exposed. So I can't say to myself, yeah, I'm going to take him down. I can't say that.
You can't fake it.
You can't. There was
some ways you could fake to make it, but you got to put in the reps and yeah.
Yeah, there was some idea. There's some scant research on fake it till you make it. I just cannot nod my head to that idea.
Yeah.
It's like you've changing your physical body posture does not alone change your thoughts. The awareness that you've got a bad posture and the awareness that you've got negative thoughts, that's the game. Increasing the awareness of what's happening inside of you. And then so it's a two-part game, awareness and then the skill to refocus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then so if you're going to say that I'm a stud at something or I'm good at something or whatever, like I've got what it takes, then what we say is for every epic thought that you're going to have, write down at least three reasons that give you the right to say that thought.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. we call that backing
it
up.
I practice every day for 2 hours because I do this because I've had these
I've done
results.
This. I've done that. Yeah. Like I've owned it here. I've owned it there. And if I've done that, I can do this. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like you got to back it up.
Yeah.
But just saying it to yourself, you know, thoughts are invisible. So they're hard to work with. So write it down, you know, get it out of your head, externalize that hard drive that's so powerful for all of us. Our thoughts, our mind is invisible. So get it out of your head. So we did that, some of that work. We did a bunch of breathing work. We did a bunch of mindfulness work. Just re-anchored him to like, how is he going to tell this part of his story? So that's a nice way to kind of think about it. In the future. Mm. How are you going to tell the story to yourself, this moment in time, this phase of your life? How would you tell it to your unborn son?
Yeah.
You know, whatever, like how will you tell the story? And so that helps to shape and govern behavior as well.
Right. That I failed miserably or that you...
Well, that I got scared and I couldn't do it. That's okay. But that just needs to be your authentic story. Mm-hmm. Or, there's in high stakes environments, there's only a few outcomes for story. I trained and I backed off, right? Because of the fear. Like I got to the edge and then I backed off. That's one story. Another story is I trained ridiculously. I got to the edge and I jumped and I died. You don't get to tell the story, but that is the story.
I went for it.
Yeah. Right. The third story is that I trained ridiculously. I got to the edge and I hesitated. I worked it out and I committed and it was successful, you know? So there's only like in binary situations, there's only three outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And his situation.
Well, I think to all of ours actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The stakes are really high in life. You only get one pass at it, as we know, as we can confirm. There might be multiple lives. I don't know that science. There's lots of traditions that would suggest that. But so we get one go at it, and we only get one go at this moment. Mm. So the work really is, the stakes are really high. If we only get 1,440 minutes a day, that's it. That's all we get. And then once one is spent, you can't get it back. So the stakes are super high. Life is happening. It's happening fast. And we're really busy as a human race. So figuring out how to be more present more often, the stakes could not be higher. And so that's why training the mind to be here now feels fundamental. It doesn't feel like it's extra. Mm. And if you can't train your mind to be in this present moment, you cannot access your craft, the thing that you care most about, parenting or business or communication or sport, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's people that I feel like they're isolating their minds a lot. They feel alone. Even when there's people around or if there's a team around them, they feel alone and isolated. And especially when there's not a team around them. You know, Felix had a team, but no one was actually physically touching him. And like, you got this. You know, he was by himself in a capsule, right? For how long was the ride up? And
5+ hours.
5 hours.
Yeah.
So for those that feel, you know, alone, like they're about to go out on stage or they're alone in an interview or they're alone in whatever, a game, you know, tennis match where you're just by yourself there and everyone's watching. How can we, is it just like what you said? It's a little bit of the breathing, the philosophy, you know, reframing the thoughts. Is that how we can continue to make sure that when these high stakes moments are happening, obviously every moment is high stake, but when it's like the whole world is watching high stakes, how can we, I don't know, just overcome those moments of isolation and fear in that moment?
I want to be really thoughtful about that because it's a really important conversation to have. Yeah. And the first part of deconstructing that is that just because people are watching, if you haven't done the work to say, I love you, and at the same time, I don't care what you think of me. I'm not going to be beholden to what my imagination tells me you might be thinking of.
That's the first thing.
Yes, it's really
not
important.
Caring but not caring.
No, the first thing I think is to genuinely love other people, right? To start there.
Like, no matter what they think of you.
Yeah, no matter what. Like that's you never really know anyways. Like as much as we're having a really cool conversation now, and let's say we did this conversation every day for the rest of our lives, and we really went under and under and under the surface, it still, I think, would be almost impossible for you to know me. Mm. I don't think it's possible for another human to really know another human. And I've been in my relationship with my wife for, you know, 20, I should know this, like married 22 years, but dated before that for a number of years, like for, you know, sub 30 years. And it's still a mystery that's unfolding. Mm. So to really love another person, not care what they think of you, that's the first part. So when you do that, you find more freedom. And that freedom to go on stage, if you will, to use that analogy, it just changes the nature of the moment, because it moves from a threat-based opportunity, a threat-based experience, to an opportunity-based experience. What's the opportunity? To express the ideas that you care a lot about, you know, but and hold that opportunity with high regard, because you're asking other people to be present with you on the ideas that you have found to be important. And then there's a high responsibility to be able to articulate as clearly as you can, you know, with regard for other people's attention. So that's the first thing that I would suggest to do.
That's great.
Yeah. And then, so how do we know how to love others? We have to figure out how to love ourselves. And it sounds really soft. And I spend my time in the most alpha competitive, rugged environments. You know, Seattle Seahawks are full alpha competitors.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough to learn and be part of that ecosystem for a number of years with Coach Carroll. And Felix Baumgartner, alpha male, the most intense human being that you'll find. If it doesn't work with those types of people, Carrie Lee Walsh Jennings, you know, four-time Olympian, gold medalist, you know, unbelievable alpha competitor.
Yeah.
And it keeps coming back to the relationship you have with yourself first. So the dialogue and the conversations we have with ourselves are really important. We are our best coach or our worst coach. We are our best friend or our worst friend. We are our, you know, an asset to ourselves or we are a debilitator to our future. And so that's where it begins. And without awareness, every world-class athlete, and that's a huge word I just said, every world-class athlete that really is interested in pursuing their best, they have great awareness. There are knuckleheads that eat McDonald's, that show up, they're freaks of nature, they don't train.
They usually don't sustain that for a decade of time. It's like a couple years and then something happens.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree with you. You know, but those that are deeply pursuing their personal best, awareness is part of the mix. Yeah, and that's a trainable skill.
Yeah.
Yeah, mindfulness is the way to train it.
Who's the most impressive trained mind human that you've seen?
I don't want to answer that.
You don't want to answer it? Because you work with so many clients.
You know, they're saying, is it me? You know, I'll tell you this statement. Humans are amazing.
Yeah.
People are amazing. We are not fragile psychologically and emotionally. We can do amazing.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Save big money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Things. And so I've got stories in my head right now of an athlete who I asked, what was your hardest moment in your life? He said, you know, you'd think it was when my mom was chasing me around the house with a 2x4 nails in it to kill me, that would be the hardest time, but it wasn't. The hardest time of my life. And he's an elite athlete right now.
Yeah.
The hardest time in my life is repeatedly showing up and all of my things and my family's things were on the lawn because we're evicted again.
That was the hardest time.
Yeah. Mm. So to be able to go from those places, to be able to, you know, I don't know, who cares what they drive, but they drive the nicest cars, wonderful houses. But
private
to,
jets.
Yeah. Maybe. But to tap into their potential and to know what it feels like to be an artist of craft, of words or movement, you know, like people are not fragile. Mm. We have fragile body parts.
Yeah.
Body parts break.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And some are so intense that they could take life. But for the most part, we are really robust,
yeah.
You know, highly resilient.
Is it possible to reach our potential or is it always expanding?
I love that question. The word potential is problematic, right? Because it's a crippler for many people. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have so much potential. Uh-oh.
It's like the pressure's on now, right?
Yeah. Well, because of the way that we've just interpreted what that means. And that usually,
there's
that
so
pressure.
So much more you can do. yeah. go do it. Oh, he's not doing what he could do or she could do.
That's right.
They could do.
And then, yeah. but that there's like this thought that comes with it, like, oh, that person sees potential in me, so I don't want to let that person down. Mm-hmm. So that's why we got to go back to that decoupling, mm-hmm. who I am from what I do. Also the decoupling of loving other people and not caring what they think. Mm-hmm. But when somebody sees potential in us, it can be a great gift if we say, yes, there is more. Show me how. You know, mm-hmm. like, what do you see? Well, I see this. What do you see, Mike? Well, I never saw that. Really? You think that's possible? Well, I mean, we have to be around people like that mm-hmm. to bring the best, yeah. you know, out of us, to really challenge us to say, that's not good enough. I love you, but that's not good enough.
That's what a great coach does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure yeah. Coach Carroll is doing that constantly. Like, we got to be better every day. How do we step up?
Yeah, the Seattle Seahawks, under Coach Carroll's guidance, is a relationship-based organization. We produce football mm-hmm. and some alpha, tough-minded people, right? But we are a relationship-based organization. It mm-hmm. begins with our there are each person's relationship with themselves, and then so we can have a great relationship with others. Because to do extraordinary things, we don't do it alone. There's always other people. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, the execution is alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Felix was alone. That loneliness that you were talking about before is a real deal. It's one of the six, as we call it, the six dimensions of being human. Like, every human has that place, that recess in their experience where they are truly lonely. Going back to that thought that I'm not sure that others can really know all of you. So there is an aloneness. We come into the world alone. We leave it alone. We're not sure what happens, you know, in between after death. But that loneliness and tapping into it and feeling it, knowing it, being familiar with it, that's a very powerful experience to do.
Yeah.
And I know it's super heavy, mm-hmm. but it's really important.
You know, I remember I used to be really insecure growing up and scared to be alone. I hated to be by myself. And when I was like 15, 16, 17, and then in my early 20s, I was just like, I am going to conquer this because I just hate the feeling of feeling scared or like no one cares or whatever, being alone. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go out as often as I can by myself. I'm going to go to dinner by myself, a movie by myself. I'm going to like take walks by myself, whatever it was. I was going to be alone and start to learn more about myself. And that craft or that art or that practice was one of the best things for me because now it's like, I love being alone in certain moments. I love being around other people, but then I'm like, okay, I need some space to actually be alone. And I'll go to dinner by myself and go to movies by myself still. And I find it powerful personally.
Where did that come from? That for you, that
I think it was just, I was afraid. I just hated the feeling of being alone. I just didn't like that feeling because I didn't have much friends growing up. And so I was just like, oh, no one's going to like me. What's wrong with me? You know, why am I not good enough to have like friends? And then I was just like, screw it. I got to figure out who I am, I think, in that time and start to fall in love with myself. So I just wanted to discover who I was and figure out all these things then.
It's a beautiful model that you're describing because from pain,
mm-hmm. yeah,
right, is a wonderful impetus to go on a journey of self-discovery.
Sure.
And part of that self-discovery journey, it's a requirement to push on the edges of instability. Mm-hmm. And for you, yeah. being alone, there was those edges.
Yeah.
And really, it's about alone with your thoughts.
Yeah.
But alone is different than loneliness. So loneliness is that sixth dimension I was talking about. Even in a group of, surrounded by a group of friends or loved ones.
You feel lonely.
You can still feel desperately alone, mm-hmm. lonely. And so, yeah, it sounds like you've done exactly what I've seen so many people that are on the path of mastery do, mm-hmm. is that they push on their edges as often as they possibly can, and yeah. they're hungry for it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like there are some that are unsettled by not doing enough. There are some of those, yeah. but there is a general sense of like, man, I put a solid day of work in today. Can I do this again tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's get it right.
Yeah.
You know, there's that sort of tone to getting after. Sure. It sounds like you did exactly that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just like, I had a lot of emotional, mental pain growing up and I just like, I don't want to feel this anymore.
So did you adopt the model? Like I need to do more. Is that why you got into elite sport?
I think early on it was just like, I didn't have any friends and I remember getting picked last on sports teams a lot, like in elementary school. And I was just, I hated that feeling of not being wanted or needed or like that was good enough. And so I just said, I'm going to be the best in the world at what I can do so that I'm always needed.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that early drive.
That's right.
But it left me feeling very unfulfilled, trying to prove others wrong. You know, I would achieve all, I was all state in multiple sports, all American, you know, whatever. But it was like, I was always unhappy. It wasn't enough. So it drove me to do more until I realized I was doing it for the wrong reasons. Like, yes, I found joy in my craft and I was like fun and all these things. But at the end of the day, when I achieved the goals, it was so unfulfilling.
That's that's that model I was referring to that is broken. We need to do more to be more. It never arrives.
Yeah.
The being, exactly. It never arrives. You know, so we need to be more of yourself. And each one of us has an authentic self that is wanting and craving to be expressed. Mm-hmm. And that journey of self-discovery is a lifelong journey.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's hard. It's rare.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, from pain that you figured out a broken model.
Yeah.
And then figured out like okay, that didn't work. And now what is the upgraded model? Okay, I got to figure out who I am and like
exactly.
be about it.
Yeah. When I started to figure out like, oh, okay, all these achievements I'm having, acquiring, aren't filling me up. Oh. Then I started to shift my model even more. I was like, okay, why am I doing these things? And what's the reason I'm going to be doing these things moving in the future? And started shifting from trying to prove people wrong to trying to lift people up and, you know, lift myself up and show myself what I'm capable of creating and to also have a more loving, joyful experience. But I'm always thinking of like, where's my biggest pain and how can I look at it straight in the eye, kind of embrace it to a point that I like, go deep within and see why I'm feeling this pain and then how can I work on it and practice on it? So it's just, yeah, I can be alone for weeks and be okay. You know, I don't need to be worried anymore because I've done years of practice. You know, same thing with girls. I was terrified of like talking to girls when I was a teenager and I gave myself a summer project where every day, whenever I felt nervous around a girl, just a random girl I didn't know, I was going to go up to her and say hello and then go up and ask for a number and then, you know, try to ask for a date. It terrified me to do this. But I was just like, I don't want to be afraid to be able to just have a conversation with another human being just because they're attractive or whatever. And so I try to find that in every area of my life at every stage. You know, it was public speaking in my early 20s. I was terrified to speak. So I went to Toastmasters every week and practiced and, you know, stuttered in front of people and just continued to fumble until I gained a little more confidence and put in the reps. So for me, it's all about discovering the pain, having a clear vision of what I want to overcome, and then just putting in the reps. Like a trained athlete in life.
It's as simple as you make it sound and as simple as we want it to be. It is that simple.
It is.
It's hard.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
But I look at it as like a sport, you know, as long as I have someone who can like give me a little coaching or just say, go try this and here's the game plan. Then I can be the athlete student and say, okay, I'm just going to put in the 6 hours of practice today and I'll report back and give me feedback. That's how I apply everything from my sports training into life.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. You know, sport gives us so much.
So much.
And at the same time, every craft can offer the same exact opportunities, right? Yeah. Sport is just so tangible physically observable.
Yeah.
But every craft offers us, even parenting, you know, like where do we go to get better at parenting? Where are those people that help us? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple manuals. But you know, you know, and ideally those people are supposed to be psychologists, but unfortunately psychology was born out of studying what was broken of the human mind. And it hasn't been until the last 30 years that we're really advancing the science of the optimal ways to use your mind.
Sure.
And so it's like, before the mics turned on, you asked like, what are you excited about? I'm so excited about this point in time right now that people are really finding value and interest in how to condition their mind. Mm-hmm. And it's this incredible swell that's taking over. The industry is exploding.
Yeah.
The value of being present is talked about all the time, mindfulness and strategies. And we're seeing the swell even in the most rugged sports like the NFL. Mm-hmm. 6 years ago, there was 1.5 sports psychologists. And now over half of the teams of the 32 teams have a sports psychologist.
Really? Wow.
You know, so that's like saying, yeah, we've always known that the mind is important. And that now there's this group of people that are highly skilled at it to be able to condition it. So it's like, God, it's really an exciting time.
I think the greatest coaches from the past, like the Woodens and the Lombardis, were almost like modern day psychologists at the time.
They're phenomenal.
They were the ones who were able to like connect on relationship level and the mental level with their players. It sounds like. Otherwise, and the Phil Jacksons of the world, otherwise there's no way they would have been champions that many years without having the mental game like mastered or trying to master it and building that relationship with their athletes.
So that's how the field, the entire industry and the science of sports psychology started is, okay, there's a question like, how do the best work?
Yeah.
Well, let's go study them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right on the money. And if you just look at like great coaches, let's call it 60 years ago, they did everything. They nutrition, physical training, technical training, mindset, you know, they did
breathing, whatever.
They did everything.
Recovery, everything. Yeah.
Right. And then some progressive coaches said, hey, you know, if we got these strength coach guys in here, you know, maybe we go bigger, faster, stronger, have a fourth quarter advantage, so to speak. And then that started to work.
Okay. So everyone has a strength and conditioning coach.
Right. Huh? So now bigger, faster, stronger. And then what do you need? You need medical because they're bigger, faster, stronger, working at a higher clip. You need, right. So you need better medical, ATCs and medical and all of that that comes with it, PTs and ATCs. And then what happens is nutrition. So we saw that wave 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It's obvious nutrition is part of the game, right?
Yeah.
It's part of the fuel.
Yeah.
And then, so now we're in this current wave where it's
mind training.
Yeah. So it's a competitive advantage. Where do we go next? Let me finish on the mind thing. It is a competitive advantage to know your mind,
absolutely,
to condition your mind. We call it front loading.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to do your mental skills front loading. So you get there ahead of time of the test, right? Before the lights are on.
You're visualizing.
You train your mind before. You train optimism, calm, confidence. Where's confidence come from? What you say to yourself. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your past success. It's not if you... you do well in warmups. That's a totally broken model.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you can train all of these things in a very structured way. And then because it's really hard to show up on what's called an ultra marathon and physically bonk.
Mm-hmm.
You put in a lot of physical training, but then you overtrain maybe. You get to that ultra or you get to the marathon even, and then you bonk. That sucks. But you know what happens a lot for most people? They do all the physical technical training. They show up and they tighten up and constrict.
Yeah.
That's a mental error.
Mm-hmm.
That's a right. So constriction and expansion. Those are the two kind of threads that we're working on. What are the thoughts that create expansion, space? What are the thoughts that create constriction or smallness? And you know, we're responsible for that in our own mind. So it's a really exciting time. Where do we go next? Probably spirit. Probably spirituality is like
a
reconnecting to
a higher purpose.
Yeah, that's probably where human evolution is going to go next, like a real investment there, along with technology. Like there's going to be some genomic, you know, micro splicing that's taking place as we're following right now that, you know, blue eyes, blonde hair, like that scary type of thing, you know, is like, it's real. But then are you following some of this stuff?
Not much.
Okay. So right now we think about, you know, competitive advantage, train your mind, your body, your craft, you know, great, great, great. But what if you want to become the fastest human? What if we want to create the fastest human, but we take ostrich legs and put it with a human upper frame? It's real. According to lab research, they are surviving in petri dishes. So how far are we away from that? I don't know. Like what happens?
What is surviving?
What I just described.
A human top and a ostrich legs?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean? How?
Yeah. I mean, this is, I'll show you all this stuff. Take a look at CRISPR. It is.
Is it like creating a human from scratch or is it?
It's genomic splicing.
From nothing. Or is it a human with no legs that they're putting legs on?
No. Yeah. So take the DNA of an embryo, right? The DNA of a human and DNA
of an ostrich. Together.
Put it together.
Already
sequencing those.
I didn't know they were testing that specifically.
Check out CRISPR.
How big is this grown or what?
Well, it's scaring us. It's scaring a lot of people right now. You know, like a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about AI and how that's going to influence human performance. That's 10 years out. You know, 5 years, 5 to 10 years. That's really going to take hold. I think that's my predictions. I'm not bullish on it yet. Mm-hmm. It is coming, right? Like some of the companies that. I've been exposed to, like, that stuff is really cool.
Some of those cool, like, dog robot things are pretty...
Yeah, there's some stuff there. It's just not there yet.
Yeah.
The most powerful thing that we can do is train our mind.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial intelligence is the closest cousin we can get to it.
But that's going to take a while.
Watching tape and watching film is a reduction of down from that. But playing the tape in your mind ahead of time, it's the most powerful tool we have.
Yeah.
But it requires discipline. It requires focus. But we can train those, right? Okay. But AI is going to help get people it's going to help people with the undisciplined mind to get better at it.
Wow.
But it's still clunky. There's lots of friction around it.
Yeah.
But microgenomic splicing is coming.
It's crazy. When I was a decathlete in college, I was just training all day for every sport. But at night, my weakest sport was the pole vault because I had very little training on it. And I had 6 months where I decided I'm going to try the decathlon and I'm going to try to be an All-American in 6 months when I made the decision. And I hadn't done a lot of the events, so I had a six-month window. And pole vault was the hardest. I was maybe like a 10-foot pole vaulter and was horrible form and everything. I would watch this pole vaulting hour-long video highlight tape every single night, over and over again, for that whole time. I would plug it in. It was my VHS tape and TV at the time in my dorm room, and just watch it until I fell asleep. And then I would go in the next morning and try to just mimic the greatest pole vaulters in the world. And throughout the whole day, I was just visualizing my form improving little by little and seeing myself go over the bar. And it was one of the most powerful things. I mean, that's when really I saw the power of visualization. It was kind of during the decathlon training because everything was so technical.
Yeah.
Every movement of the shot put, the pole vault, and the javelin is so
technical.
It's that
kinetic sequencing that is so cool
exactly.
in that sport.
And having to see like the lineup and the hips of just everything and the discus or whatever. I was just trying to watch the perfect way to do it and try to replicate it every single day. But I'm, you know, one of the biggest believers in visualization for everything.
You know, I don't use the word visualization. I use imagery, you know, same thing. Right? But imagery gives me the space to also talk about not just seeing it, but feeling it, smelling it,
experiencing it.
Yeah. So this is an ability. Imagery is an ability. Visualization is an ability, which anything that's an ability, you can get better at. Mm-hmm. And how do you get better at it? Well, know what science would suggest, know what greats do, how they do it. And the easiest way I can describe it is that you and I both know this, is that when you close your eyes and you imagine something sensual, you imagine a woman or whatever, you imagine that thing, your body will change.
Ostrich legs.
Yeah, ostrich legs. That's where you want to go. Literally, your physiology will change. And that's...
When you think of something sensual.
Yeah. Sexual or sensual, like you know that. Mm-hmm. Everybody that's listening knows that. You just close your eyes and you have this amazing experience in your mind.
Your body.
Your body turns
tingles.
On. Yeah. Yes, yes, it does. Okay, so that's why, you don't need any more research to know that. And every 14-year-old little boy understands this intimately. Okay.
They can't control it. Yes.
They cannot control that. Okay, so take that principle and layer it on the thing that you care most about. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does that mean? That means when you close your eyes, because we're visual creatures, and you close your eyes, you know, there's so many visual distractions. Close your eyes. You've got to warm up your brain and your mind. Mm-hmm. So your brain from a sensual standpoint, senses standpoint, not sensual, but senses. Wake up the senses of touch, sound, smell. Wake up all of your senses. And the way that we do that with athletes is, I keep saying we, you know, it's like, but see a fruit in your mind's eye. Become familiar with the way it tastes, can you control it and move it? What's the color and the texture and the feel? Wake your mind up that way because a fruit is so tangible, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you're really good, you can taste it. Your mind, yep. And then see if you can control it. Can you manipulate it, move it around? Because that's what you have to do in imagery. And then go straight into the thing you care about. You've got all of your senses lit up. Your mind is committed to focusing on the thing that is important to you and slow it down. Right. And then when you're better, speed it up. Mm. When you get even more skilled, speed it up again. And so if you can go full time, real time with all of your senses in play and you can really feel it, you're onto it.
Mm-hmm. A couple more questions for you. You talked about pillars of recovery. What are those pillars and how can we incorporate that in our lives?
Yeah. So a great question. So again, you know, in the world stage, we definitely talk more about the science and the art of recovery. Everybody works hard. And so there's four pillars. The first is sleep well, and that's a given, right? Just saying it though is important because science is very clear. Most humans, 68% to 70%, you know, one standard deviation from the norm for people is requires 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Independent of job function, independent of geographic region, it's a human experience. Most of us need 7 to 8 hours. When I ask people how much they're getting, most aren't getting 7 to 8. So what's going on? There's a lot going on there. And we can go on and on about like the tactics for that. But most people do know the tactics. It's a discipline thing to put down TV, to put down Instagram, to put down whatever. Yeah. And, you know, get your room as dark as you possibly can.
Cold.
You know, 68, 70 degrees, somewhere in that range. And then, so sleep well and to really value that. Those, and our brain does something funny. If we study some research here, people that for 5 days have 5 hours of sleep when they do a pre-post and a post-test on reaction time. So if you go to sleep for 5 hours for 5 days, at the end of that period and they measure you, your reaction time, humans' reaction time is no different than a drunk person. They would not be able to pass, you know, a 0.08, you know, 0.08 driving test. So sleep well. The next is move well. So get oxygenation throughout your system, you know, like get your heart rate up.
Sweat.
Sweat. Like really have a, you know, general guidelines are about 4.5 hours a week.
Of movement.
Yeah. 2 hours.
Physical movement.
Moderate to intensity, 2 hours of, of, you know, non-cardio. So somewhere in that range. And then actually, let me do these in order. Sleep well, eat and hydrate well, move well, and then think well. Those are the four pillars. There is a social aspect that's important for recovery, but I want to just focus on the ones that you can fully control. Okay, sleep, you got it. Eat and hydrate, eat colorful foods. You know, plenty of hydration is really important. We make it really simple, like 40 ounces before 2 o'clock, 40 ounces before four, like make it super simple. And like exact nutrition is a science. There's a science to that, but
of course.
And then the other two, you know, get your heart rate up, move well, and then think well, be optimistic.
That's great. Yeah. What's the question that people should be asking you more or that they're not asking themselves enough?
Yeah. That is a super thoughtful question. And I think that, what most people do ask is how can I be better? I don't think that's the right question. I think the right question, and like, listen, like if you knew what I knew, and you might know what it, the path and what it takes to become an Olympian, let's say, for your child to do, to go that path, you probably would not encourage them, you know, but we are littered with crazy, you know, anxious parenting, trying to help their kids, you know, do well in life, but it is a dark, dark path. So I think the real question is, how can you help me know who I am? And what can I do to become myself? I think that that's like, you know, that's important. But also at the core is, you know, what is the human experience about? And my answer is, I can't tell you, but that's the right question. Go and figure it out. Go discover who you are and what this journey is about.
Yeah.
And it's not about being the best in the world. I can't tell you how many times people that I know have been on a podium and they get off the podium crying or whatever. And the world thinks that they are celebrating this moment of achievement and they get off and they say, Jesus, I thought I was going to be different. I'm still that same.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So know who you are and figure out what the human experience means to you.
I like that. This is called the three truths. If this was the last day for you, and you had no podcast or content or anything out there anymore, it was all erased. So all the information you had was gone. But you had a piece of paper and a pen to write down three things you know to be true about your experience, about life, that you would pass on to the world. And this is all people would have, these three lessons or three truths. What would be yours?
For sure, it begins with love. The second would be courage. And the third would be a path of self-discovery.
Yeah, those are cool. I want to acknowledge you for a moment for your gift of helping people open up about who they are and for helping people learn the tools and the strategies to overcome so much pain and suffering and anxiety and stress that a lot of the world is facing that in my mind is pointless for people to have. It's holding them back from their potential or from their living who they truly authentically are. And I'm just really grateful that you are in the world doing this work in an authentic, loving way and pushing the boundaries of what's capable for all human beings. So thank you for all you do.
Ah, dude, that's really cool. Thank you for that.
Of course.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And congratulations on everything you've done.
Thank you.
You're definitely making a dent in the space and increasing people's awareness about what is possible and some ways to go about it. So
thanks,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Before, I got one more question before I ask it. Where can we connect with you and learn more about your work? Where can we get your information?
Oh, cool. Yeah. I appreciate that. Two ways. One is, Coach Carol and I created a business called CompeteToCreate. It's on .net, CompeteToCreate.net. And that's where we help organizations and CEOs and companies understand how to train them, their minds to become their very best. And so that's been a really fun process. And
who's that for? Like teams of organizations?
Yeah, so if you're inside an organization and you're interested in that, we've got a digital training experience. So it's an online course. We've got some in-person stuff where our staff are Olympians and sports psychologists that go right in and they understand our methodology to help people transform and become their very best by training their mind. So it's been, we have had so much fun, you know, working with influential people in the business world to do that. So that's
cool.
One.
That's cool.
The second is findingmastery.net. And so, I'm sorry, Finding Mastery Podcast. And the website is findingmastery.net. And that's just been a, I think you and I talked about this earlier, just a wonderful journey about understanding what goes into people that are on the path of mastery and what they're doing. So that's a fun podcast. I'm grateful to be part of that and curate that. And then social media is at Michael Gervais. That's Twitter, G-E-R-V-A-I-S. And Instagram is at Finding Mastery.
Sweet. Awesome. Final question for you. What's your definition of greatness?
Thank you. being able to authentically express yourself in any conditions.
Michael, thank you so much, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you.
There you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this one. I could have gone on for another hour just listening to and diving into the mindset of how we can really optimize the mind and figure out anything that holds us back, anything that makes us fearful in life, and really use it to our advantage to move towards it and overcome certain things so that we can create better results in our life. I'm all about finding the tools, the strategies, the techniques to help optimize and have a better life. That's what the School of Greatness is about. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends. I'm at Lewis Howes over on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Tag me anywhere you want to share it. You can check out the full show notes, video, resources, links that we talked about at lewishowes.com/533. We'll have some great quotes up there. You can tweet those out if you want to. And make sure to tag Michael as well whenever you're posting this out. Again, if you're an entrepreneur or freelancer or startup creator, or you just have a book that you want to put out there or some social media graphics, check out designcrowd.com/greatness. You get a $100 VIP offer when you go there right now. Again, I use them for a lot of my projects. I just did a book cover with them. I just did a project on one of my new courses. I had them design our full new logo. We've redesigned websites. Whatever it is, designcrowd.com/greatness is a great solution to help you create amazing designs for your projects or your business. Check it out at designcrowd.com/greatness. And also, if you have not got a copy of The Mask of Masculinity, please pre-order your copy right now. The pre-orders will help so much in getting the message out there for me during the first couple weeks of our launch. And if you go to maskofmasculinity.com, you can learn all about what's in it for men, what's in it for women, how it can take your life to the next level, and all the different bonuses we're offering. Again, if you buy one copy, 3, 10, 250 copies, we add so much value with some of our programs and courses and never before released content that you can't get anywhere else. So make sure to go to maskofmasculinity.com, pre-order a few copies, and when you do, screenshot your receipt and tag me on your Instagram story. And as Michael Jordan said it best, you have to expect things of yourself before you can do them. Guys, we must expect more from ourselves, and it starts with optimizing the way we think and the way we're being in order to do more in our lives. I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great. We'll be right back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doors take us to summers away or winter adventures and afternoon getaways. Your dedicated Fidelity advisor can help you open those doors by working with you on a comprehensive plan to help you reach your wealth's full potential. Because doors were meant to be opened. Visit fidelity.com/wealth. Investment minimum supply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.